This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
The hour seems to bring us more updates on the decision rendered by Judge Sue Robinson suspending Deshaun Watson for six games, as now everybody is starting to rip through the 16-page decision, and we get more details on it. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM, Channel 80, Chris Budden, Jason Fitz, in for the guys, presented by Progressive Insurance. Before we get to our next guest, a couple of updates that we're getting out there on the Twitterverse to some of the language that is in here. It is interesting to me that Judge Robinson, according to Pro Football Talk, Judge Robinson dejected Deshaun Watson's categorical denials of wrongdoing, along with his denial that he ever developed an erection during massage. In the most tactful way possible, she concluded that he lied while testifying about the most important aspects of the case. She did find that he intended to cause contact with his penis, B, did so for a sexual purpose, and C, knew such contact was unwanted. So alarming details to come out in my mind for a six-game suspension. Also, as to the finding of the conduct undermined or placed at the risk of the integrity of the NFL, pointed out that Watson invoked his status as an NFL player and used his ties to the Texans to reinforce his request for massages focused on sensitive areas. So, Chris, more details coming out that just – It makes it hard for me to put it in my brain. I know you've got some more that's out there also.
Yeah, in terms of the number has been confusing because there were 24 women that have come across and alleged, and then there's 60 massage therapists. So here's what's broken down in the judgment today. Judge Robinson writes in her decision that while Watson allegedly worked with more than 60 massage therapists during the 15 months beginning the fall of 2019 through the winter of 2021, the NFL only investigated claims of the 24 therapists suing Watson for the damages. Of those 24, the NFL investigators were only able to interview 12, but the NFL ultimately relied for its conclusions on the testimony of four women, as well as 37 other third parties who submitted documentary evidence. Judge Robinson writes, I find that the NFL has produced sufficient circumstantial evidence to prove the last prong of the test that Mr. Watson knew such sexualized conduct was unwanted. It is important to note that some women have come out saying they were never contacted by the NFL. The NFL interviewed 12.
Well, let's do a little crosstalk now, bringing ESPN Radio together on different shows, because I get to hang out every single night, Monday through Friday, with Sarah Spain. I'll be on there tonight talking with her some of this also, but we're going to bring Spain on now. Spain and Fitz, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday on ESPN Radio. Sarah, thanks for hanging out with us. Always appreciate it. And I mean, when we read all of that, make it make sense. You're smarter than I am. So how do we get from, all of this happened to, but it's only worth six games?
I think it's a combination of factors. One being that the NFL's precedent in cases like this is woefully low, which then means even when she finds him guilty, she is still going to punish up into and actually beyond in cases of nonviolent situations like this, beyond, because she found the situation to be egregious. So when the NFL sets a precedent that six games, and in the past has only given that six to violent offenders, and then the judge subjectively decides that a violent attack, like a domestic violence or striking someone, is more horrific or egregious than a sexual assault, then she decides that only, you know, nonviolent occasions have precipitated three games in the past. So this six games is actually the most for a nonviolent offender. So that's one problem, right? The base level is too low for these kind of crimes. From the NFL's perspective, they need to revise the CBA and the personal conduct policy to reflect that, particularly with an expanded schedule. I think also, Fitz, we talk about this a lot. Like, none of us liked it when Roger Goodell was judge, jury, and executioner. We didn't think that that was necessarily the right system. But what they've done now is essentially, for the cynic in me, set up a sham where they can act like the independent judge means that this is being decided by her, when in fact the NFL was basically the prosecutor here. So a league that has a horrific record on sexual violence and sexual assault, and who, according to the women they interviewed, victim blamed them, asked them what they were wearing, were condescending and combative and accusatory, then represent those women in the case against one of their own, and are being held to the very fair accusation that they never hold owners and other people within the league accountable for the very same or similar crimes. This is a system set up to fail. So they can try to convince us that this arbiter was an independent judge, but in the end, it still reflects the presentation put on by the NFL, a league who does not care about women.
True. I mean, it is the evidence that the NFL was able to give. Sue Robinson did not go out and get the evidence on her own. So with that said, then do you think that Roger Goodell, Sarah, sits there and says, okay, 6 months, good enough?
It's tough to say. Fitz will remember that a couple of months ago when it was first leaked, quote unquote, that the NFL was looking for a full year suspension. I said, I wonder if they leaked that so that when they give him less, they can act like they wanted more. Oh, but this is our first year with this independent judge. It would undermine the system we've just created to appeal. And I don't know if they will appeal now. Now, the judge said in this ruling that the NFL did ask for a full year. So I believe that that was what was presented. I'm not as cynical now about whether that was something that was simply leaked. But we do know, again, that they were only presenting the information that they chose. And I don't know how you can consider someone a first-time offender when you count that as a mitigating factor to lessen the suspension when it's someone who repeatedly did these acts over the course of a year plus to 30-plus women, allegedly, right? I don't know how you can use that as a factor to say Deshaun Watson is deserving of less when if those were to come out, if he were to have had this situation after the first six, and then 6 months later, another six. And then you know that there would be more of a punishment than this. So I think there's very faulty logic at play here. And I think Robinson, not only, in my opinion, her subjective view of sexual assault as nonviolent, particularly in the case of alleged forced oral sex, ejaculation on women, and forced touching of the penis, if you look into the eyes of a sexual harassment or sexual assault survivor and try to argue with them that the act does not count as a physical and violent act, I think you'd be hard-pressed to get them to agree with you. So I don't know if Roger Goodell will appeal this and send it back to himself, undermining the procedure that they just put into place.
We're talking to Sarah Spain, who you can check out tonight, Spain and Fitz, ESPN Radio, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern. Sarah, I mean, I'm trying to wrap my head around the precedent. As you know, I always care about that too much. The precedent that this sets, if we're going to buy that the past performance or the past punishment, I should say, is the reason the floor is so low, is there benefit to the league stepping in simply to try and raise that bar this way? Or in your mind, do they have to go back to the CBA and create a new floor?
I do, because what she sits out in this ruling is that the NFL was unfairly asking its players to react to a system that they hadn't warned them about in advance. Essentially, that I guess if Deshaun Watson had known there would be a longer suspension for repeated acts of sexual assault, maybe he wouldn't have done it. It's so gross to even say out loud that I'm rolling my eyes as I'm talking to you. Imagine in real life outside of the NFL saying, you know, well, if we just told people that murdering people was bad, maybe they wouldn't do it. It's so he knew that these acts were unwanted. She lays that out in the ruling. He repeatedly did them despite being women leaving in tears, women refusing to schedule again, women canceling sessions, women reacting with humiliation and shame and fear. And he did it anyway, which means that the idea that her ruling set ahead that if he had just been warned in advance that the resulting offense would result in a bigger suspension, he wouldn't have done it, I think is absurd. So I do think the NFL has to put it in the CBA so that for future rulings, judges can't possibly use that as an excuse.
The NFL Players Association came out yesterday and said they would not appeal whatever suspension before they supposedly knew what it was. If you are trying to protect your players, 6 months in comparison to what the NFL asked for, which was a year plus postseason, comes across pretty light. Do you think that the Players Association knew what the punishment was before they said that they would not try and go against
it? Yeah, I mean, I think they probably either had an inkling of what her ruling would be, or they felt, due to the proceedings and the negotiations back and forth, that this was the likely result. That's another thing. I mean, I don't understand how we're supposed to look at this process and be satisfied with it when we hear that there were negotiations ongoing between the league and the PA. How is this truly an independent ruling? And if it is an independent ruling from this judge and she's the ultimate arbiter, why would there be back and forth negotiations between the league and the PA trying to settle on an agreed upon suspension? Makes me really question this process yet again. I would like a little more transparency from the league. And like I said, I really feel like this is a sham setup to allow us to believe that the system has changed and that no longer is Roger Goodell the ultimate decider. And clearly the judge had a role in this, but this is still the NFL acting as prosecutor to try to hold up to us that the system is different and to take the blame off themselves for what is ultimately a system that consistently fails women.
Sarah, the ruling states that the judge believes the NFL carried its burden to prove that Watson engaged in sexual assault. As I said earlier, to break it down even more thoroughly, that he intended to cause contact with his penis. He did so for a sexual purpose, and he knew that that contact was unwanted. Through all of this conversation, if a judge looks at this and finds it and then says that there isn't enough to go forward criminally, for anybody that says, well, no criminal charges mean nothing happens, like how do you negotiate that if you're a judge sitting there saying, I think all of this is true, but there's not enough for criminal charges?
Well, I've posted this before, and I posted it again a couple times today, and I think people who are really interested in this would learn from reading it. There was a really well-reported article in Sports Illustrated months ago that touched on the system that's in place for things like indictments. And while everybody said, oh, you could indict a banana or whatever it is, like, there's actually a woman named Melissa Morabito, and she worked for the University of Massachusetts Lowell School of Criminology, and she also was a co-author of a U.S. Department of Justice study that looked into decision-making and attrition in sexual assault cases. And of the 3,000-plus cases studied across 3 years across multiple states, only 1.6% of cases where sexual assault was reported to police ever made it to court. Even lower likelihood of a jury trial for Watson, because the accusations are, you know, sexual assault without direct penetration or rape, even though there were accusations of performing oral sex being forced, but also because he's a well-known person, a famous man in a high-profile role, and because these are very difficult to prosecute. And prosecutors worry about using resources and affecting their winning percentage in jury trials, so they will not present to the indictment board or the case in a way that they think will win and send them to a jury trial, because they don't want to run the risk of losing it, because there is such a low percentage of cases that actually then go through to conviction. There's a whole bunch of research in that story in SI from months ago that I posted on my Twitter. And there's other reports, including Jenny Brentis to the New York Times, about the communication between Deshaun Watson's lawyer and the person in charge of that indictment. There were tons of phone calls, 12 different phone calls, more than 24 text messages in the months leading up to the Texas grand jury's hearing the criminal cases. And there seems to be some out of the ordinary conduct, including a presentation from Deshaun Watson's lawyer, packets, information, submissions that are not normal for cases like this. So there is a question about whether those grand juries and the decision not to pursue the criminal cases was done above board.
How do you think this affects female NFL fans?
I would like to say it would affect both female and male, because I've got to be honest, I am so sick of people demanding that women all boycott the NFL while not asking the same of themselves. I think it does affect us more gravely. I think we are more aggrieved by feeling like we are not welcomed or valued. But I also think that if you are a man, you should care just as much about the message that the NFL sends with these rulings. And I think you should be just as loud, because we need sponsors to hear. That is the only thing that matters in professional sports is money. And for all the times that people have said, well, why don't you walk away? I do not want to leave the only people supporting and watching the NFL to be the ones that don't care about this stuff. I refuse to let bad people ruin the things I love by simply walking away when they repeatedly tell us they don't care. We have to continue to be in their faces and holding them accountable if we have any belief that things will change.
Listen to her tonight. I still won't know how to speak then. Spade and Fitz, Sarah,
I appreciate you figured out by then.
No, there's no promises. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the brilliance. Always appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks for having me. See you guys.
So Spade and Fitz tonight, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to pop on there for a minute and talk to Sarah. This is something that she's passionate about. But I also will tell everybody, and I will just implore everybody, go read on this. The more you read the New York Times stuff, the more you have a better understanding of the complexity of all of this case, I think the better. The number of us that are yelling loudly that really are only yelling based on 3 or 4 Twitter headlines, that's not healthy for anybody involved in the process. We're going to keep breaking down what's next for the Browns. It's Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle motorcycle, RV, and boat insurance. Visit progressive.com.
We have enormous breaking news from the National Football League. Adam Schefter, the decision has been made. What can you tell us?
Sue L. Robinson, the retired federal judge, handed down her decision. Deshaun Watson has been suspended for 6 games.
6 games is within what the Browns thought in that building. They were thinking 6 to 8 games for months. If you're in that building right now, you have to be relieved.
Spartan Hunt on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, Chris Button, Jason Fitz, presented by Progressive Insurance. And look, it's the biggest news of the day. It's the biggest news of the year for the NFL in what has been a wild year. The most, I'd say, significant cloud hanging over the league going into the season has now dumped on us. And we know that Deshaun Watson gets a 6-game suspension. Chris, I started this whole show off by saying the one thing I don't want to be I want to be real, and I want to be honest, and I want to be authentic, and I don't want to be an ass. And I also want to understand what the judge looked at from the evidence they were given, she was given. And what's stunning to me is an hour and a half ago, when we started this show, 2.5 hours ago, whenever it was, I was sitting here thinking, okay, well, must not have been presented great evidence. Obviously, she's got a reason that this makes sense, and I'm going to believe that a judge came into this situation and ruled with logic, because that's how my mind works. And the more I read from the 16-page document that's out there, the less it makes any sense to me. Like, I don't understand how you can sit here and say, yeah, I think he lied as a judge, not as a person, not as you and me, but as a judge, say, yeah, he lied. I think he exposed himself. I think he forced himself on people, but in a nonviolent way, which essentially apparently means no weapon was used. And I think he understood that it was unwanted. But I also don't think that that warrants more than 6 games. Like, what? I can't make that make sense.
I do feel like we've evolved in the last 2 hours and 17 minutes we've done this show, because we sat here thinking, okay, well, this must have been the conclusion she made based off the evidence, and she is a judge, and, you know, it is her evidence to look over. And now that we're getting, and still it's not complete transparency, because they're, for whatever reason, they only interviewed 12 women and we don't even know what was said from those women, how those interviews were conducted. So there's still a whole lot that, even now that we've dug into the process, I'm even more upset about the process. But in general, the stuff that has now come out through the 16 pages makes me more frustrated than when we started the show. And the idea, and Sarah brought it up, of the, this is categorized as nonviolent. You're standing in a room with a man who's twice your size, who puts his penis on you and tries to force himself on you, and it's only considered nonviolent because he didn't punch you? Like, what? At what point is I guarantee you that the woman who was standing there sure felt at that time like that was pretty violent, also having no idea how violent it could get at the time. So you're telling me that that situation that maybe occurred how many times, possibly up to 24 times, repeated enough to be egregious, was 6 games.
I can't imagine. Like, I like to play the shoes on the other foot game, Chris. It's one of my favorite games. Like, but we're going to switch spots and we're going to feel this to my core. I can't imagine sitting there with a friend and having them explain, well, you know, I've been accused of doing this over and over and over again. The judge found that it was unwanted, that I absolutely exposed myself, and that I knew that I wasn't allowed to do it, and I forced myself on people, but it was nonviolent. Like, what? And then me saying as a friend, dude, don't worry, it was nonviolent. I mean, I can't imagine coming to ESPN and having them say, hey, you've been accused of this from 24 people, and then going to HR and saying, but wait, it was nonviolent. So now it becomes an issue of why this length of suspension. And there's two reasons that we've been able to figure out so far. Number one would be the concept that the league changed the punishment so drastically, specifically for this. This still has nothing to do, for everybody that's just tuning in, with betting and PEDs. That was a different punishment structure. But you're going to say that the punishment structure has changed specifically for sexual assault to a level that you can't just come down with the thunder of the gods. That's on the NFL. Number two, you only presented evidence they took from 4 women. That's on the NFL, too. Like, the more we get into this, the angrier I get at the NFL for either you didn't present great information, which is on you, or you've blown this so many times for so long that that's still sort of on you. I just still can't figure out how the judge looks at it, says all of these things are true, and then says, yeah, but it's only worth 6 games and no fine.
I also can't understand the idea that the entire locker room supports him. You know, we had someone on from Cleveland, ESPN, said, like, that Baker Mayfield had lost the locker room because he wasn't a good leader. You're telling me the rest of the 52 teammates on his team are going to read the things that have come out and be like, oh, okay, I'll block for you. Also, he just took the field. And according to reports from reporters out there, he was greeted by cheers from fans as he took the practice field.
Well, I mean, that's the hardest part of all of this. And I won't pretend, y'all, I won't pretend to have a real answer. If Deshaun Watson was the quarterback of my beloved Raiders today, I cannot pretend to know how I would feel. Because I've got a Raiders tattoo. I've spent my whole life rooting so hard for this football team. I genuinely don't know how I would even be able to process that. Because, you know, you can look at it all day long and say, well, I'm going to root for the team and not the player. Your team's not going to be any good if your quarterback's not any good at that level, right? Like, so the thought of being a Browns fan today, it turns my stomach, because I genuinely don't know how you turn off the part of your mind, if you're a super fan like I am, how you turn off the part of your mind that makes every Sunday life. Like, I shouldn't still be bothered on Tuesday or Wednesday by what happened in a Raiders game, but I am. I'm a grown-ass man with enough going on in my life to realize that I shouldn't care that much, and I still do. I can't imagine putting on a Deshaun Watson jersey on a Sunday and feeling good about it. I just can't. I can't imagine putting it on and feeling good about it. I also can't imagine saying I'm never watching a game again, because the first time that score comes in, oh, your heart skips a little beat. I genuinely don't know what I would do.
I can tell you, you can become a reporter and then you cover all these events that you lose all fandom from anything, and that you really are able to look at it from the logical side of it. But I even go, and it's not on the burden of just the women to be able to stand up to this and say, like, this isn't right. Six games isn't enough. Like, those players go home to their wives, though, and they're going to sit there and say, that's the guy that you're standing next to in a locker room blocking for? Like, there's so many different, you know, webs to this that I don't see he comes back game seven and all of a sudden, like, the Browns are great and head to the playoffs.
This is, and if they are, how everyone's going to navigate those, well, I don't know. We need to get more legal expertise and more legal perspective, and we're going to do that from one of our own. Not only is she a friend, but she's also somebody that knows law better than all of us. Amber Wilson going to join us next. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Six games is within what the Browns thought in that building. They were thinking 6 to 8 games for months. If you're in that building right now, you have to be relieved.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Bart and Hahn.
It's Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80. Chris Budden, Jason Fitz hanging out. We're brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. Liberty Mutual customizes your coverage so you only pay for what you need. I need some expertise. We need some expertise, Chris. We're about to get smarter. Amber Wilson, ESPN Radio host, one of our faves, a regular on this show, and somebody that, I don't know, happens to be a lawyer. So, Amber, I need you to make me smart out of the gates. I'm going to ask you a question that may be the stupidest question you've been asked all day, but I'll admit my ignorance and what I don't know. So I just keep thinking about Jenny Vrentis and the work that was done for the New York Times and the reporting that so many of us have read about it that may or may not have even been made available to the judge in this case that was hearing everything. Is there some sort, in an arbitration like this, is there an opportunity for somebody that's done this much investigative reporting, for example, to actually talk to people about what they found, where they found, how they found it, so it can be used as part of the decision?
Well, first, it's great to be with you, Fitz. I don't know if making you smart is a small task, but I'm going to do my best here in answering this question. So the judge in this case, the former federal judge in Sue Robinson, she was not going to take into account a New York Times article, right? But she did have available to her a multitude of resources. And one of those did include, she did recognize in one of her footnotes that apparently the NFL had presented quotes from one woman, a fifth woman, who didn't actually testify at the disciplinary action, but did give quotes to an article. And so my guess is maybe it was, in fact, that article, and she chose not to, I guess, utilize that as testimony in her review of this case with Deshaun Watson when she was reviewing all the evidence in front of her. So basically, she was only going to review what was actually in front of her and the testimony that was actually given to her and the evidence that was in front of her and presented by both sides. Both sides had their opportunities to present all the evidence. They probably, I would imagine, on the NFL side, included some information that was maybe also included in that New York Times article, but the article itself wouldn't have been part, or at least a strong part, of her consideration by any means.
Amber, 2 years ago in the CBA, they decided they're going to write in this independent investigation that they did not want to be handing down punishments because of the backlash that they have gotten in the past. So we're going to hand it off to someone else. That someone else in Sue Robinson is also getting the investigation notes that the NFL itself did with the 12 women that they chose to speak to. What do you make of the process?
Well, right. And the NFLPA, of course, did have their opportunity as well to present their side of things. But the process is essentially, as you described, with the investigation. You have the investigators, and a lot of what she's reviewing is what the investigators who were brought in from the outside and do have a lot of experience apparently investigating allegations of sexual assault and sexual misconduct such as these as former prosecutors themselves. That's who handled the investigation. She noted that in her opinion. And so she did rely heavily on what they dug up essentially in their investigation. And then again, what was also presented in front of her through the arguments, the disciplinary action from each side, through the testimony of a bunch of witnesses, over 30 witnesses, as I understand it, testified. Four of the women who had the allegations against Deshaun Watson testified as well. So she reviewed a multitude of evidence and testimony and the investigations that were provided to her. And this was the conclusion she reached. But what's really important here isn't really what her determination was in terms of his conduct, because she concluded that through those investigations and everything she reviewed, that Deshaun Watson essentially did the things that the NFL was alleging, that the NFL met its burden of proof at every turn. It was just that for her, the punishment came down to essentially precedent. And that's where she ends up with the 6-game punishment for Deshaun Watson.
So if she concluded, and I agree, the more information we get, the more it looks like she's concluded the NFL was right in everything they said. If that's the case, does that help the NFL with a leg to stand on if they choose to appeal this thing to themselves, basically, and then justify why they come in with a higher suspension?
Right. I mean, I laughed a little bit when you said appeal this thing to themselves, yeah. Right? Because, I mean, they don't really need a leg to stand on in appealing this thing to themselves. That's the truth of the matter. Roger Goodell could essentially do what he wants here. The problem that he's going to run into is then the NFLPA is probably going to run to federal court and actually file a lawsuit here in federal court. And that's going to be difficult for the NFLPA to win if they try to get a federal court involved. But we've seen it in the past, like with the Deflategate Tom Brady suspension. We have seen this addressed in front of actual reigning federal judges at times, even though there's a CBA. You know, it's interesting when you consider what the NFL should do next, because this was obviously not the punishment that the NFL was asking for. The reason that she gives for providing this punishment, frankly, I mean, her reasoning is well-founded in the regard that she referenced specific incidents in the past. She referenced how she got to the 6-game suspension, and she did make note in her footnotes of the fact that the NFL has not issued suspensions and punishments against owners who have also committed, you know, or have allegations of sexual misconduct against them. So I think that harmed the NFL positioning, where she felt like a full season was totally out of the question, which is what the NFL wanted. So now if the NFL goes back and then it tries to levy a full season and just essentially do what it wanted to begin with, then what is the point of this independent arbitrator that had been agreed on under the CBA? And so it kind of ruins the optics of the entire process. And of course, the fairness of the entire process, that might not be something that the NFL wants, because they did try to improve the process against the old CBA to this one by bringing in this independent arbitrator. And now if they just go ahead and overrule her, then basically things haven't changed in the NFL. And that's not a good look for the NFL. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. At the same time, there's public perception out there that six games is too light of a suspension. And so if the NFL does nothing and doesn't appeal this, then how does that look in the court of public opinion? I'm guessing those are the things right now the NFL is weighing.
Yeah, and we're still waiting to hear from the Browns, who are on the practice field. We'll likely hear from them later on this afternoon. If there is no appeal and this is the six games, is all said and done? Because at the end of the day, there have been 23 of 24 settlements, or settled with 23 of the 24 women. There's still one woman out there who has not settled. There are six other women that the Houston Texans have settled with. Is all done for Deshaun Watson?
Most likely, at least in terms of NFL ramifications. I mean, we'll see if the one woman who's the holdout right now in terms of settlement takes her case all the way to trial. If she does, I would expect that to probably be a very lengthy continuing process. You're probably not going to get to trial for, you know, another year's time. So it would take a long time for us to get a resolution. Obviously, also a lot of time in there for her to decide to settle. And the huge overwhelming majority of civil cases all end up settling. So it's not unusual that Deshaun Watson has settled 23 of the 24 pending civil actions against him. And note, Chris, like, he settled 20 of them before this disciplinary action. Mm-hmm. It also, or this disciplinary hearing, that also has everything to do with the fact that Sue Robinson and only heard testimony from four women actually in front of her. I would imagine that there is an overlap there in terms of the women that he settled with not being able to testify against him because they probably signed non-disclosure agreements as part of those settlements. So that might have been where you got the four women, only four of, or five cases, essentially four actually testifying in front of him that were presented as part of this disciplinary action. But I would imagine that, yeah, if the NFL doesn't appeal this, then this is what it is, and we're going to get six games. It wouldn't make sense to me for anybody to run to federal court at that point without first utilizing the appeals process. And frankly, the NFLPA and Deshaun Watson's camp should actually feel like the big winners, I think, with only a six-game suspension.
Amber, as always, you are brilliant, my friend. Thank you so much. I know it's been a long day, but you've been crushing it all day, and we appreciate your expertise.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Amber Wilson, ESPN Radio host, joining us. All right, you guys are fired up. You want to chime in? We're going to let you. Fingers crossed. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll take some of your calls. We'll also figure out what this means for the Browns on the football field. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio. Jason Fitz, Chris Budden, filling in.
Deshaun Watson has been suspended six games for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. Continuing coverage all day. More next on ESPN Radio. Bart and Hahn.
Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. Chris Budden, Jason Fitz in for the guys. Everybody reacting to all things Deshaun. Let's go to Ivy down in Baton Rouge. Ivy, thanks for calling the show. Appreciate you. What you got? Ivy? Are we there? We're trying, Ivy.
She didn't want to stick around.
Well, I mean, I thought we had Ivy. Well, Ivy, give us a buzz back, and we'll try Ivy again sometime. Let's see if we can get Jerome going. Jerome, thanks for calling the show. What you got?
Hi. I appreciate you guys taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Listen, I got to agree with Chris completely on this. I'm a 62-year-old guy with a couple of grown daughters and one special needs, and I also have been a lifelong sports card collector and a lifelong Lions fan, but I feel better about being a Lions fan today than a Cleveland Browns fan. But anyway, I threw all my Deshaun Watson cards in the garbage. I went through everything, and I give my nephews all my cards when I, you know, after a year or so, just give them to them, and they can keep them. You know, they love going through them. But, yeah, six games was ridiculous. Obviously, something happened if they settled 20-some lawsuits. And I know Jose took most of the words right out of my mouth on his call, but he was, you know, as a dad, as a person, I work for a special needs school, and if I even had any allegation of wrongdoing, I'd be fired on the spot. I wouldn't get suspended, you know. So it's appalling to me. I'm hoping Roger Goodell vetoes this thing and gives him a whole year at least, and I hope he loses more than $1 million. That's ridiculous.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Jerome. And like the loss of the money is part of what's interesting, Chris, because they structured his contract in a way for anyone that doesn't know, he'll lose about $375,000 out of his fully guaranteed $260 million contract.
Maybe he'll give some of it to sexual abuse victims, such as some charities, some nonprofits.
That would be a good way to start the process of rebuilding a little bit of his appearances with the community. I mean, I don't know. It speaks to sort of one of the wild things that's going to happen over the course of the next few months. It's like we're going to have to be reintroduced to Deshaun Watson, the quarterback, but also Deshaun Watson, the human being.
And there'll be an entire PR team behind it to rebuild the brand that is the NFL's highest paid quarterback.
Yeah, and that's when you say it that way, boy, the NFL's highest paid quarterback. It all leads to something I never thought we'd be saying today. We'll break it down next for you on Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio. Chris Budden, Jason Fitz in for the guys.
Bart and Hahn.
We have enormous breaking news from the National Football League. Adam Schefter, the decision has been made. What can you tell us?
Sue L. Robinson, the retired federal judge, handed down her decision. Deshaun Watson has been suspended for 6 games.
Look, I know most of us don't really want to sit there and read a huge research paper. Sometimes, though, you have to. I would implore you, get out there and read the findings of Judge Robinson when it comes to the Deshaun Watson case, because it is eye-opening. So many people that have even called in today have said, well, there's no proof of this and no proof of that. Understand one thing. In her written document, she tells you that she does believe that the NFL presented enough proof. She tells you that he does believe that he exposed himself and that he knew that he wasn't supposed to be doing it. She tells you that the contact was unwanted and that she believes he participated in it. She tells you everything that the NFL's been saying she believes happened. It still came to 6 games. It's Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, Chris Budden, Jason Fitz, presented by Progressive Insurance. I laugh at it, Chris. It's not funny, but I laugh at it because so many people say, well, there's no evidence. The judge is saying, I buy the evidence. I just think that because of the past punishment, 6 is all I can give it.
Right. Well, and I kind of laugh at it because 3 hours ago we started this show being like, I'm going to be logical and put my emotion aside. And it feels icky because he's settled with 23 of the 24 women and the Texans settled with 30 of the women. And there's all these reports. It no longer feels icky. Now that we have been able to read the actual report, now it feels wrong. Because there is evidence, and there was enough evidence to prove that it was a pattern of behavior that was egregious. And there are details of what have alleged happened that she finds was enough evidence, and it's now gone from icky to flat gross.
The reason that it's a 6-game suspension in part is because it's his first offense, although as Sarah Spain pointed out to us earlier, if you believe that there are 20 of those offenses, like at what point does it count as the second or third? Yeah. It's the first offense. He'd been a pillar of society before then as another reason. And then most importantly, this is a wild change in what they're trying to give as punishment for sexual assault type cases. So because of the specific punishment for this specific issue, the judge believes he did everything wrong, but that 6 is the appropriate amount of punishment, which leads us now, Chris, to saying, Roger, save us. The very person that we created this policy for was to stop Roger Goodell from being judge, jury, and executioner. And now we're looking at it and saying, my God, Roger, step in, like do something about this. It's a huge change.
Yeah, and Sarah brought this up. I mean, where is the bar? Even in her report, she says, well, Ray Rice was suspended 2 games for knocking out his, you know, significant other. So now when the bar is set so low, where do we put it now? And again, it's only 6 games also because it's quote unquote nonviolent. You look at other things where Roger Goodell stepped in and Ben Roethlisberger went from 6 to 4. And now we're sitting here being like, oh, but Roger, you wanted it to be a year. Maybe he did want it to be a year. Maybe he didn't. Maybe that was just the way of their way of getting in front of it, knowing that it was going to be 6.
I feel, if you'd asked me when we started the show almost 3 hours ago, I thought there was no chance that the league was going to petition, to appeal it. Why appeal it? It is what it is. Move forward. I figured they'd try to find some way to save face. The more we get into this, when you read the ruling where the judge flat out says that she thinks that the NFL presented enough evidence to support their case, if I'm the NFL, now I'm saying, well, look, you bought our evidence. You believe he did everything wrong that we said he did wrong, and you're just saying that this is too harsh a punishment, which we don't agree with, so we're going to appeal it.
I think the opposite. I've now been confirmed that I don't think that they are going to appeal it, because now you've undermined the entire process that you set up in the first place so that you wouldn't have to be the one to sit there with egg on your face.
And you are right. As I said earlier, it's a dangerous precedent. If we let Roger Goodell come in and appeal the very first time that we have new punishment procedures, what happens next time when we all agree with the punishment, but then Roger comes in and is like, I'm on a first name basis with him. Roger comes in and he's like, hey, Fitzy, I don't like this one. I'm changing it. Then we're going to yell at him. Like, Chris, this is no win.
Yeah, we've come a long way in the 3 hours. I think we've both have almost switched arguments back and forth 5 different times and have now settled with it's worse than icky.
Yeah, well, and the complexity of it is part of why I tell everybody, if you think you got it all figured out, man, there are a lot of layers to this. I know Candy and Carlin will keep breaking down those layers. Be sure to hang out with them. This has been Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Chris Budden, Jason Fitz filling in. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.